welcome to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Talk about stuff that's messing with your head and crazy stuff that's happening in the bed. Why? Because many church folks have fallen into darkness. The Bible calls us to walk as children of light. The Bible says, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Ladies and gentlemen, we are dealing with a new kind of church. What do I mean by a new kind of church? You know, today most churches try their best to stay out of politics. They say, you know, religion and politics don't mix. You know, keep your religion over here in the church house, but don't take it outside in the world, in the political arena. And then don't bring the political arena, what's happening in politics, don't bring that in the church. And so keep them separated. Keep them separated. And that philosophy is taking our churches and our world down the drain. Did you hear what I said? By them keeping it separated like that is taking our church and our world is going down the drain. Yeah, listen. What is it that God is not in charge of? See, when you're telling people that, you know, you don't want to bring your religion out here on the job, or don't bring your religion, you know, in the workplace or in the public arena, then what you're trying to do is limit God. And our God is an unlimited God. And then when you come to church and you say, now don't talk on no politics because you know you're gonna muddy the water and stuff, then again you limited God, because God is in charge of government. See, who established government? God established three institutions, ladies and gentlemen, or three major institutions. First, God established the home. Marriages was established by God in the Garden of Eden. Then God established government. That was in Genesis chapter 9. God established government. But then God established the church. He established the church. And so you got, and because Jesus said in Matthew 16, on this rock I'll build my church. So what you got three major institutions. You got the institution of the home, you got the institution of the government, and you got the institution of the church. And the problem that's happening in our world today, people don't want God involved in the government. And that's wrong, ladies and gentlemen. And that's why our world is going down the drain. Matter of fact, it used to be folks used to come to the church to find out how they should behave in the world, whether it's the government on jobs or what have. But today we done forgot all about that. But the preachers was the ones that used to lead the movement in our country. Whatever political movement it was the preachers that used to do that. And for the most part, it was the preachers back in the 1800s. They had what they called the Black Robe Regiment. And that's what we want to talk about for the next couple of days, the Black Robe Regiment. And so that you can learn about these preachers that really set the standard of how the government ought to behave. So get close to your radio and listen as we talk about the Black Road Resume. Okay.
Like the black-robed preachers of the 18th century, Dan is a pastor who boldly proclaims the principles of liberty from the pulpit. Dan is the pastor of the 1,000-member Trinity Baptist Church in Yukon, Oklahoma, while also serving as a member of the Oklahoma House of Representatives. As a leader of the modern-day black-robed regiment, Dan recently released his new book, Bringing Back the Black-Robed Regiment, which documents the daring deeds of the original patriot pastors who stood against British tyranny. Please welcome Pastor and State Representative Dan Fisher as he presents Bringing Back the Black-Robed Regiment.
Now, I may have to kind of skip over some of this because this is a video, and what it's showing right now is how all these people done got hung, and these are a lot of white folks that has got hung. And so this man now, he's going to this church. He's walking into this church.
Reverend, with your permission, I'd like to make an announcement.
Young man, this is a house of God.
I understand that, Reverend. I apologize. The South Carolina militia is being called up. I'm here to enlist every man willing.
Son, we are here to pray for the souls of those men hanging outside.
Yes, pray for them. But honor them by taking up arms with us.
And bring more suffering to this town?
King George can hang those men, our friends. He can hang any one of us.
Dan Scott, barely a week ago, I heard you rail for 2 hours about independence.
And?
Mr. Hardwick, how many times have I heard you speak of freedom at my father's table? Half the men in this church, including you, Father, and you, Reverend, are as ardent patriots as I. Will you now, when you are needed most, stop at only words? Is that the sort of men you are? I ask only that you act upon the beliefs of which you have so strongly spoken, and in which you so strongly believe.
Who's with us?
That's a little young man stands up. Another man stands up. Old man stands up. And so a lot of these men are standing up. It's a man and his boy stands up. Another young man, another boy stands up. So you got the majority of the men there in that church look like it's standing up, getting ready to go and fight.
Reverend?
And the Reverend got his shotgun.
The shepherd must tend his flock and at times fight off the wolves.
And so the Reverend done mounted the horse and he's going to fight off the wolves. And that's how it used to be, ladies and gentlemen. The preachers used to lead the charge.
Well, good evening. My name is John
Peter Gabriel Muhlenberg. Now that's a mighty long name. So you can call me Peter. That's what my friends call me.
Now this
in fact,
is
my enemies, way back in the days when I...
Now this is a narrative. This guy, he's speaking at this church. And so he's doing a first person narrative. So he's putting himself in the place of this John Peter Gabriel Muhlenberg back in the 1800s, 1700s.
Fighting over in Europe, call me Devil Pete, because in those days I had a pretty fiery temper. Now, I was a pastor in Woodstock, Virginia in the 1770s. And like most pastors of my day, I would climb into my pulpit every Sunday morning wearing my preaching scarf and my black robe. And this was normal attire for pastors in my day. I know it may seem a little odd to you today in your day, but this is how we looked on Sunday mornings. And we would open our Bibles and we would preach about God's redemption. We understood that eternity is the most important thing. But we also understood that the Bible has a great deal to say about what happens when nations forget God, or nations honor sin instead of righteousness. We knew what it meant when godly men were in charge and what happens when wicked men are rulers of government. So we preach those things from our pulpits as well. Now I know it may seem a little strange for you to see me as a pastor standing here holding my my trusty musket, but you've got to know that there was a time in American history when pastors and churches stood up for what was right. We stood in the gap for liberty and truth. Now, I'm sure many of you have been told and are under the impression that the primary reason we fought was for excessive taxation. The cry in our day was taxation without representation. And I must confess to you that that tea tax was onerous to us. In fact, it caused a number of my friends to throw a little tea party down in the Boston Harbor in 1773. But old friends, make no mistake about it, we weren't fighting against excessive taxation. What we were fighting against, plain and simple, was tyranny. Excessive taxation without representation was just one of the symptoms. You see, we understood that if tyranny is not resisted, it will increase, grow, and ultimately place the truth within its sights. So, like many pastors in my day, I didn't just pastor, I was involved in government. In fact, I served in the Virginia House of Burgesses. Now, I served there with a few fellows that you might recognize. One of them was a fine Virginian by the name of Mr. George Washington. I later had the privilege of serving under him. I also served there with the greatest statesman I've ever known, Mr. Patrick Henry. In fact, I was there in 1775 at St. John's Episcopal Church when Patrick Henry stood in front of us and brought to life the moment in which we were living. I remember his words like they were spoken yesterday when he said, "Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God." I don't know what course others may take, but as for me, you can give me liberty or give me death. I got to tell you, when he made that dagger motion to his chest, many of us in the audience sighed. We caught our breath, because what he said brought our moment right down to where we were living in such a clear fashion. Well, I continued to pastor in Woodstock, and so I rode back there and continued my duties, but Henry's words just kept ringing in my head and in my heart. Is life so dear, peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. So I announced to my congregation that January the 21st, 1776 would be my final sermon as their pastor, because it had come time for me to take a bolder stand. Now, my people gathered and there was a full house, and I climbed up into my pulpit. In those days, our pulpits were on a pedestal. I opened to Ecclesiastes 3, where Solomon says, there's a time for all things. And then I got to verse 8, where Solomon said, there's a time of war and there's a time of peace. And then I said, ladies and gentlemen, Solomon's right. There's a time for all things. There's a time to preach. There's even a time to pray. But there's also a time to fight. And that time has now come for me. Now, as I was saying those words, I was stepping down out of my pulpit. I had another surprise for my people that they weren't quite prepared for. In fact, I stood there before them and I began to remove my preaching collar. And then I began to remove my preaching robe. Now, my people had never seen me like they were about to see me, because I was wearing a colonial soldier's uniform. You see, my good friend, Mr. George Washington and Patrick Henry, had recommended me to be commissioned as a colonel. Now, I didn't exactly know how my people were going to respond, so I had arranged to have a little drummer boy outside, and I told him, here's the signal. When I open the doors to my church, you begin to beat on that drum. And that's exactly what I did. I opened those doors, and he began to play. And then I turned around to the men of my church, and I said, men, our liberties are being challenged. You know that I'm a man of peace, but I'm also a man of justice. And sometimes just and right government needs to be defended at the point of a sword. Who will go with me? Now, I got to tell you, I didn't know how my people would respond. I had placed a muster roll outside on a little table beside that drummer. But my people stood and began to sing the old Martin Luther hymn, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. And then one by one, to my great pleasure, the men of my church began to stand up and walk outside and sign that muster roll, just like you saw on this screen just a moment ago. Well, as they signed that muster roll, they were joining the new 8th Virginia Regiment. I was going to be the leader of that regiment, and you might say that I was turning in my preaching robe for a set of riding spurs. Now, I am Colonel Peter Muhlenberg. Now, I led my men through most of the great battles of the War of Independence. We had no idea how long the war was going to last. I led them from 1776 all the way to 1783. We didn't know it would last that long, but we fought in all of the major engagements. And I found that in addition to being a pretty good Lutheran preacher, I was a pretty fair commander on the field. In fact, here's a painting of General Washington and his inside staff. And if you look at the far right, there I stand now, Major Peter Muhlenberg, Lutheran preacher, now promoted to major. In fact, I was there at Yorktown. My men and I led the final assault on Redoubt 10, that when it fell, it opened the way for us to force the surrender of Cornwallis and ultimately brought about the end of the war. Mr. John Trumbull actually captured that surrender moment in a painting that I understand hangs in your Capitol building today. Here we are seated on horses over to the right. And if you look at an enlargement of that section, if you look right here, that's me about to become Major General Peter Muhlenberg. Now, I understand that in your Capitol, you have something that you call Statuary Hall, where all 50 states, we started with 13. I can't believe you have 50 now. All 50 states have the privilege of honoring two of their favorite sons and or daughters. And my home state of Pennsylvania chose me as one of their honorees. And there I stand with my sheathed sword in my left hand. But notice what's flowing over my right arm and back behind me. Right. It's my preaching robe that I set aside to lead the fight for liberty. Now, before my little part of this program is complete tonight, I want to tell you about two others that I knew that were amazing men. First, I want to tell you about James Caldwell. James Caldwell was a Presbyterian. I'm Lutheran, he's Presbyterian. You'll find that all the denominations were involved. But you see, in our day, the Presbyterians were the fiery preachers. And so he would get up in the pulpit and he would say things that I swear to you, I thought he was trying to make the British man on purpose. He'd say, why, there are times when it is as righteous to fight as it is to pray. Well, if he was trying to make the British mad, he succeeded, because they put a bounty out on his head. So every Sunday, James Caldwell would walk into his pulpit wearing two loaded flintlock pistols hooked in his belt like this. Now, he'd climb up into his pulpit,
pull out the pistols, place them on the pulpit, open his Bible, preach. Then when he was finished, take the pistols, put them back in his belt, walk to the back of the church and greet his congregation as they left. I've always said a preacher in the pulpit with two loaded pistols, if he takes an offering, I promise you, you're going to dig deep, right? That was preacher James Caldwell. Well, the sad thing is they did make good on their threat, because when they invaded Elizabethtown, New Jersey, you know what one of those redcoats did? Jumped over the fence to the Caldwell's house, saw Mrs. Caldwell, Hannah Caldwell, through the window, took his musket and shot right through the window and killed her in cold blood. Terrible tragedy. Well, that evening, James heard about it, and so he rode back into town and helped do her funeral. When her funeral was over, he rushed on over to Springfield, New Jersey, because his men were engaging the British there. But when he got there, he found that his men were in a world of hurt. They had run out of wadding for their muskets. Now you see, these muskets, fine fighting weapons, but with no wadding, you can't hold the shot tight, and they're pretty much useless. So what does he do? Well, he comes up with an idea, jumps on his horse and rides down to the First Presbyterian Church of Springfield, New Jersey, runs inside and begins to grab as many hymnals as he can hold in his arms, filled with songs written by Isaac Watts. He wrote songs like When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. We sang many of his songs in our day. Well, what's this preacher going to do with these hymnals? Well, he rides back to his men, and he starts throwing them out to his men and telling them, men, tear out the pages and use the pages for wadding. So I want you to get this picture in your head. Here's preacher James Caldwell telling the men to stuff Isaac Watts down the barrels of their flintlocks, firing away at the British, and all the while he's yelling, give them Watts, boys! Put Watts into them! As his men fought the British. That's the Presbyterian preacher James Caldwell. I want to tell you about another man. He's a very young man. He happened to be a Lutheran preacher like myself. His name was Joab Trout. On September the 10th, 1777, just as the sun was setting, General Washington asked young preacher Joab Trout, just 25, to preach a sermon to prepare us for the fight that we were certain would happen the next day. So there we stood on one side of the Brandywine Creek, and on the other side, the British. Well, Joab stood up there with time running out because the sun is setting, so he preached a short sermon, but wow, was it powerful. And then he finished with an incredible prayer. And in his prayer, he said, Lord, the sword of our enemy gleams over our land. The dust of our land is dampened with the blood of patriots. We ask you to strengthen us for this fight. When he finished this prayer, he said this one last thing, and God prosper the cause. I got to tell you, we were ready to fight those redcoats right then and there. But by then the sun had set, we'd have to wait till tomorrow. And on the very next day, September the 11th, 1777, we did just that. We fought those redcoats. My men and I were all over the battlefield, plugging holes in our lines. Unfortunately, we lost that battle that day, but we walked away with two great victories. Number one, we proved to ourselves that we could stand toe-to-toe with those redcoats. And we proved to them that we weren't going to surrender our liberties without a fight. And oh, Joab Trout, what did he do? Well, he fought beside the rest of us that day valiantly and was killed that day. Just 25. Died to defend my liberty and yours. So you see, when my generation, led by men like Mr. Jefferson and his Committee of Five, wrote the famous words, Declaration of Independence, when we said that we were willing to sacrifice our lives and our fortunes and our sacred honor, those weren't just words to us. We meant it. And we were willing to do whatever it took to defend the truth and liberty against tyranny. Now, to give you an idea of how the preachers preached in that day, I want you to listen to this sermon. Because you see, ladies and gentlemen, what you're hearing is a part of American history that most of us were never taught in school. I got to tell you that I was never taught these things. I was never told the role that preachers played in the Revolution. I was never taught that men like Peter Muhlenberg and James Caldwell and others you're going to hear about in just a moment led out in the fight to defend our liberties. It was all because of strong preaching like Samuel West from Dartmouth, Massachusetts. Listen to just a little portion of his sermon.
All right, we're going to pick that up tomorrow. That was Dan Fisher, and he was giving a reenactment of the Black Robe Regiment. All right. Thank you so kindly for joining us. Listen to us all day long because we're in your corner right here on Ghostbusters.